Yeah, let me tell you something else about this product. And David knows that, and I know that, and Gary knows that, and almost everybody in here does, direct mail does that. David didn't write this book to make money on this book. This book is just the start. I mean, the direct marketing in this book is just going to be the life of it. And what will happen is that this book will evolve and become a part of a larger product, or he'll sell the rights. Like, I'd love to buy the rights, the reprint rights from him, so I could use this book as a premium. Say, when I sell the set of tapes, I'd love to be able to include his book. And there'll be other people in this room who have products for sale that are looking for ways to add the perceived value. And if you could buy books, old books like this, to add to the perceived value, you can do that. There are a lot of things to do. I mean, how many people in this room would give David right now $1,000 for the rights to reprint as many copies of his book as they could have? Now, why don't you look behind you? Now, you see 60 hands up. That's $60,000 he can make right here today from that book. But you got to look at direct mail project, a product, a lot of different ways. He can sell us non-exclusive rights to reprint his book. He'd make 60 grand right now, and he still has the right to sell the book. And every time we run an ad trying to sell his book, what do? We increase the chances of everybody in this room selling that same book. Because the more ads that are out there, everybody's going to say, you know, everybody in the world is saying this is the greatest book in the world. We've got to buy it. So that's the way you got to look at this. You don't just look at saying, well, I'm only going to make 2% or 3%. And, you know, the worst part is that all of us in this room, and Gary and I and Karen, we're the worst offenders. We have videotapes that we have sold that have made us lots and lots and lots of money, and we just got quite tired of marketing, and they're sitting back gathering dust. But some of you will have products that you would love to have a premium, a nice premium, to include your product to increase sales. And there are a lot of us who have books or videotapes that we aren't using that we would like to include as premiums. I mean, there are different ways you can do it. Another thing about David's book is, a lot of you may not want to buy it because you don't want to read it. I mean, it's going to take, you have to sit down and read and understand the words. But what if he included as a free premium a audio cassette, a condensed audio cassette reading of the book? You know, it's just going to cost him to do that, to create that cassette now that the book's written? $600. And if it increases sales by, I mean, if it increases his response rate by 10%, if he goes from a 1% response to a 2% response, and he does a 10,000 mailing, that could make him another $30,000. So don't look at it as just he's going to do a cold mailing out to a bunch of people and expect to make a 1% or 2% and then drop it. I mean, this book is just the start of the direct mail is just the start of the life of this project. I mean, we already proved by a raise of hands here that if he wanted to, he could generate $60,000 from it today. I mean, if he'd sell me the reprint rights, I'd give him a check right now for $1,000. And a lot of other people would do the same thing. He's not going to sell the reprint rights for $1,000. Not yet, anyway. We're going to go to lunch here. One more question, then we're going to go to lunch so we can get back in time to hear some more stuff.
David, in the Ogilvy formula, mm-hmm. The headline, illustration, body copy, and then your offer at the bottom. What difference would it make, would you feel, in marketing this if you had some kind of an illustration or even more about how many pages it is or how long it would take you, you know, to read it? The illustration, for example, if you were to add that to this, and I'm not saying that you should, but if you were to add that illustration, would that make a significant difference in the...
Yes. An illustration either of myself or of the book itself, yes, I think would probably help.
Yeah, you got to realize that David whipped this out in a couple of hours or an hour or so. I mean, this is not a real good example of what he's doing. It gives you a good idea of what it can do, but it's not an example of something. If he were going to do a direct mail pitch, it would include more than what you see right here. We're going to go to lunch. David is going to have books back here. He's going to be available. Everybody, before he leaves, I think we should give him a round of applause. It is now 15 minutes after 1. Let's all meet back here at 2:30. 2:30. There are plenty of nice restaurants up north and down on Central Avenue. 2:30. Okay, the weirdness continues with, we have a special guest here. Our next speaker is John Carlton, and personally, I've never heard John speak more than about 5 words in a row, so this should be pretty interesting. John is a survivor of the L.A. riots, or the cause, I'm not sure which. John said he had a good time, but he couldn't get that TV into the door of his apartment. But anyway, with no further ado, this is John. Before John comes on, would somebody read to me what John's supposed to talk about right here?
Selling it with an attitude.
Yeah, John's got an attitude, and he's going to talk about selling with an attitude. John Carlton.
Yeah, Bill figured the seminar was going along entirely too coherently, so he asked me to speak for half an hour and screw things up. My name is John Carlton, and I am a night owl. I freely admit this. I'm not ashamed of it. The reason I say this is because as a night owl, I had to be my own boss. I couldn't work for other people because I just couldn't get myself up in the morning and get to work on time and do all the things that they wanted me to do. That's how I wound up in as a advertising copywriter. When I go to work, I travel all of 10 feet to the front of my Ocean View beach house, where I have everything I need spread out on a couple of tables. I use a computer, fax, phone. It's a great lifestyle, able to make a very, very good living. Over the last 10 years as a freelancer, I've worked with some of the top LA agencies. For the last 4 or 5 years, I've worked with Gary Halbert. He and I are a writing team. We generated many millions of dollars during that period of time. I did all the work late at night. Gary took all the credit during the day. So. It was a perfect partnership. I've written for Jay Abraham, working with him right now. A few other people. Currently, I have some letters in the mail bringing my new clients about $6 for every $1 that they invest. So I have been able to hold on to my talent over the years, and I am very happy for that. What I'm going to talk about very briefly is I'm going to give you an inside glimpse as to how a writer like myself structures the appeal of an offer. And I know you can't see it very well, but this is a chart I have made. I call this the appeal-o-meter. On this side, we have cold, hard reality, if you're writing this down. All the way on the other side, we have magic. This is the height of the graph. Down here is zero. Almost nobody likes the appeal. Almost nobody will respond. At the very top is almost everybody. And I'm going to give you about 5 examples, and these examples are all going to follow more or less this curve, from cold, hard reality being almost nobody, all the way up to almost everybody when you include magic. This will become clear as I begin to deliver this. I'm going to give you 5 different markets that I've worked in and examples of the 2 different kinds of offers, from the reality side and from the magic side. On the diet market, for example, if you were trying to sell a piece either in the mail, in print, on TV, in a video, if you were going to deliver cold hard reality for a diet product, you would say something like, you must eat less, exercise till you drop, be patient, and lose your couch potato lifestyle. I think everybody will agree that's a pretty negligible appeal. I think almost nobody will respond to that. On the magic side, the offer would be something like, you eat a pill, you go to bed, and you wake up skinny. Now, Gary will attest to this. There are actual offers that crop up from time to time in the National Enquirer saying just that. Lose weight while you sleep, things like that. So I'm not making this up. A middle ground in the middle of this might be something like Richard Simmons' video. You're all familiar with that, where it's sort of you work hard, but the pounds come off like magic. Maybe to be a little more clear on this, the way I like to write is I try to get as close to the side of presenting a magic solution to the people that I'm trying to get to buy the product I'm selling without being absurd. As long as I can rationally present my argument and put as much of the magical appeal into it, getting as far away from the cold, hard reality, that's where I like to be. Another example is the financial field. I've written for a lot of the financial newsletters. The cold, hard reality of the financial markets is that you would have to study the financial markets until your eyes bleed. You risk everything you own and you sweat bullets constantly. I think everybody will agree that's an appeal that a very, very low appeal. On the magic side, if I was going to have the perfect product, it would be take simplistic, no-risk investment advice for a few spare bucks, go to bed, wake up rich. That has big-time appeal, and I have seen appeals like that in the mail. The middle ground would be I would present a trustworthy, proven plan by a well-known financial advisor, and those are the types that I have written for. Another market is the opportunity market. the cold hard reality of the opportunity market, sometimes called the get rich quick market. The reality is you would find a viable market niche through tedious trial and error. You'd work like a dog and take ridiculous risks with your future. Now, this has a low to moderate appeal. Actually, people like Jay Abraham and Robert Allen are able to sell very high-priced products using that very appeal. On the magic side, the perfect product would be you would buy a how-to book, and it's not necessary to actually read it. You'd go to bed, and you'd wake up rich. Another market is the popularity market. Everything from how to pick up girls to the Dale Carnegie, how to win friends and influence people. On the cold hard reality of the popularity market, you would have to actually listen, learn to listen to other people. You would have to purge yourself of all disgusting habits, and you'd have to risk your ego constantly. This is an okay appeal. Dale Carnegie did pretty well with this. On the magic side, however, you listen to a subliminal tape, you go to bed, and you wake up with a gorgeous blonde lying next to you. I think that would have monster appeal. You could see how that would. And there are actually products out there selling that type of product in exactly that way. I've tried them all. A market I'm currently involved in is the what we call the muscle market. It's marketing products to bodybuilders. Now, it's a very interesting market. The cold, hard reality of the muscle market is that you would have to work out like hell, hurt all the time, and have no life outside of the gym. This actually has a moderate response, which tells you something about that market. Even so, there is a magic appeal to that market, and that would be you drink some goop, you work out once, and you wake up looking like Arnold Schwarzenegger. And there are appeals out there just like that. In that muscle market, 20% response is very, very common. In fact, I have two pieces working right now, and 20% response is just phenomenal in any kind of market. And these guys that I'm working for, if they get less than 20%, they're very, very disappointed, and they're so spoiled by the amount of money they're getting back. Anyway, to bring this home a little bit, a personal experience I had recently was I went to buy a new computer. I was working on a 10-year-old computer doing word processing with 10-year-old software, and finally it broke down and I had to go out into the computer market and buy a new one. I am computer illiterate. The only person with less knowledge of computers would be someone like a Neanderthal like Gary Halbert, who thinks computers are like paperweights or something. Anyway, so I went out there. I live in Los Angeles. Within a 10-mile radius of my home in Los Angeles, there must be 100 stores just selling computers. And they have names like Computers R Us, and We Sell Computers, and Computers and Computers and Computers. That's the name of the store. However, I chose to buy my computer from a company in South Dakota. I never met the people I talked to. Did it all over the phone, and they shipped it to me through the mail. The reason was because they offered me a magical solution to what I wanted to do. I don't know a lot about computers. They had a package already set up that would come to me with the software loaded. I just gave them my credit card number. 2 days later, there was a knock at the door. There was UPS with five big boxes. I opened up the boxes, didn't have to put anything together, stacked it up on my table, plugged it in, and I had a working, fully loaded computer blinking back at me. They had it was high quality. It was custom made just for writers like me who needed a certain amount of memory and power to the computer, but you know, I don't need a lot. I use it mostly as word processing. And they just appealed directly to every hot button that I had. They had a major guarantee. It was a wonderful experience. All right, one little corollary to this is I call this, we can use the same chart here. I'm going to have to change some of the wording. It's
I hope everybody in here drew a picture of that chart on their little yellow pad so that when you get home you can remember what this is all about.
This is what I call the move your butt-o-meter. This is how to get people to react. Down here on the end where almost nobody will react, the way you finish up your piece is you say there's lots of time, we got plenty, I'm going to be here, call when you feel like it. On the high end of this would be the deal's over tonight and you'll rue your loss forever. And the charge is just about the same. It's a simple way to reiterating what David Deutsch was talking about. You have to imagine your customers who you're writing to, or going over TV or through print or however you're marketing to them. Imagine a huge, somnambulant, sloth-like creature sitting on the couch, completely unwilling to move a muscle for anything. You have to motivate them to actually move across the couch and pick up the phone and dial, 11 digits or something to call. And that's really the way I think of my customers sometimes. Not to put them down. Well, yeah, okay, to put them down. But I think the writers who have experience in writing to the various markets will attest to my experiences of that. Anyway, that's really all I've got. I wanted to give you a little inside look at the way copywriters think. And if there's any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. Otherwise, I'm through. No questions?
John, can you remember any of the headlines you wrote for your famous or infamous paranoia thesis?
You caught me unawares here. No, but I might be able to come up with them a little later.
What have you found is the most effective time limit? 5 days, 10 days, 30 days before the deal's over?
I think it depends on the market. There is no panacea to that. I have a list. I actually wrote it down once. I tried to bring it. I lost it. My office is in my home, and it's a mess. It's not necessarily the deal's over. That's kind of a catch-all phrase. You just make up any kind of excuse to try to get the person to move. We'll be talking. You'll see better examples of that as we go through the seminar and we actually use it. But you just try to make them feel like if they don't act right now, that they will miss out somehow. Because the farther you get from the actual reading of the piece, the person has the piece in front of them, they read it. If they wait 5 minutes before they get to the phone, you have a chance of losing that customer. If they put it aside to go do anything, you want them to get so hot and bothered that before they even put the piece down, they're on the phone and they're dialing. And we have people, this current piece I've got out now, getting a 6-to-1 return. People are calling before they're finishing the piece. And they aren't able to give the department number because that's on the last page. And people on the phone are having to direct them to that. So,
do you have any general rules about the length of the piece you're going to mail?
I write very, very long copy. The shortest letter I think I've written in the last 5 years has been probably 8 pages, and I have one out right now that's 18 pages. And that's packed wall-to-wall copy.
You start
talking, and you say everything you need to say, and then you finish, and you say how long it is, and you mail it out.
That's for specific markets rather than the general public, I presume, right? Do you think the general public would read 18 pages of... You think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to talk about that, but okay. It has to do with targeting. You target the right person, and like we said earlier, person's in heat, and they get something that's going to help them stay in heat, they're going to read it. As a matter of fact, Gary Halbert says you can't write too long. Gary Halbert gave me advice before I got married. He said, if you're going to marry somebody, how much would you like to know about that person? And obviously the answer is everything. And it's the same way with people who are spending money with you. Before they spend money with you, especially for expensive product, like this seminar, something that's very expensive to get into, how much do you want to know? Is 2 pages enough? Is 4 pages enough? Or do you want to know everything? I mean, wouldn't you like it if I would have included photos of the room and maybe a videotape of downtown Hot Springs? It probably would have increased the response rate. But if you want to increase your response rate, in most cases, you can't give too much information. I don't know if information is the right word.
There's a kind of a joke anecdote that was circulating around for a while. What's your name, sir? I can't read your...
Ralph.
Ralph? Somebody asked a famous copywriter why he liked long copy, and the guy says, I can guarantee, I'll bet you $100 I can make you read a 99-page document through the mail. And the guy says, okay, you're on. And they made the bet. And the guy says, okay, all I'll do is I'll give you the headline. And the headline is, following is all the details of Ralph's sex life. Huh? Well, it would sell to you, though. So that's an absurd, that's taking it to an absurd length. But by detailing it, by hitting all the hot buttons, Presbyterian dentists in the United States, you get a high readership among that group. He has the mic.
Yeah, John, how important do you think it is to put a department number at the end of where you order? It's got like dial 1-800, whatever the number is, and then you put department such and such. In a lot of cases, I mean, there's no particular department, it just makes it sound important. Do you think that's important to put that at the end of the ad?
I have no idea what you just said.
My accent's surely not that bad, Al.
No, there's an echo,
John,
here.
John, what he was asking, he wants to know how important it is to have a department number at the end of your phone number when people call in.
There's a whole bunch of information here. I heard somebody talking about what kind of responses they can expect and things. There's a lot of misinformation out there about direct mail. I have clients come to me all the time and say, well, we're going to get a 2% response on this, aren't we? Isn't that average? And there is no average. There's a lot of misinformation, a lot of sort of right information, sort of not right. It just depends. You know, if it makes sense to use a department, you would use it. If it doesn't make sense, you don't. Gary has run it without any kind of marketing except for the phone number. Otherwise, we might direct it to a person in the office. There's all kinds of tricks you can use. But once you understand why you would want to do that, then you'll understand why the question really is just a kind of a last-minute detail. It's not a major part of the piece.
Yeah, we don't use a department in our offers because we think that people will assume that we're just that we're on a voicemail system or something, and you call up and you get an operator. We want them to not have to worry about remembering the department. And the reason you use a department is to find out how they found out about your company, right? If we're running 10 ads or 10 direct mail letters, we want to know how they found out about us. And you know how we find out? You know how we find out that information? We say, how'd you find out about us? And they tell us. So we don't have to worry about what department number, because it's kind of like taking a test. You ask them what department number, and they go, oh, no, I got to know the department number, and then they hang up. We can't afford that, so we don't use department numbers.
What's the range that you charge for your services, John? And what
Me?
Do you, what do you ask for? From
They're the asking which services.
You got a checkbook?
And what types of, and what kind of information do you want from your clients before they can do business with you on the product?
To answer that, let me tell you, I am living proof that this seminar is completely and absolutely worthwhile and almost necessary if you want to live the lifestyle you want to live. I am almost untouchable as far as taking clients. I take almost nobody. I'm able to pick and choose, and I charge an arm and a leg. And the people I work with, it's worthwhile. We make a lot of money. People call me all the time. My phone number is listed. I certainly don't hide from talking to people. And I help people for free a lot. If it's just a one question or something, that's not a problem. My standard fee is $7,500 up front. I'll write the piece, and I will get a 5% royalty on the gross amount that is brought in from that. As far as I've written on everything from... On everything, I don't think I went through all the products I've written on. I don't think there's a consumer product in existence that I haven't written about at one time or another.
John, what are the hot buttons for the opportunity market?
We're right talking. Now? I got a glare here. Oh, okay.
Like you were saying, there are hot buttons for different markets: bustle market, popularity market, opportunity market. What's currently pushes opportunity market hot buttons?
Right now in the opportunity market, people worried about the recession, well, the depression, if you listen to Bill. People are losing their jobs, and people are looking for real ways to stay in their communities after the Ford plant closes. I don't actually have any numbers. Gary, do you have numbers on the market? Yeah.
There's probably about 2 million names available that you can access for the opportunity market. I think he's right. I think any headline that you're going to write about for the opportunity market right now, you want to put, you want to reference the recession. You know how to make big money boiling shrimp on street corners in spite of the recession or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But there's one thing you need to be careful about the opportunity market right now. The temptation is to write to people who've lost their job or about to lose their job. Well, the problem is they don't have money. And the one thing I want everybody here to know when you leave is don't try to sell products to people who don't have money or don't even have close to having money. Sell products to people who have enough money that they are buying things that they're interested in, that they're selfish enough to spend money on themselves. If you're trying to sell something to people who are in bad, bad, bad times, you know, we were going to produce a tape on how to survive personal bankruptcy. We thought it was the best idea in the world because all these people are getting bankrupt. And then we discovered they're bankrupt. They don't have any money. They don't have Visa, MasterCard. They can't pay us, and we don't want to take their checks. So what do? It's a good idea, but you can't sell to those people. So you have to be careful. We're going to talk about what you're doing with the opportunity, and we're going to talk about ways to make it work better.
I would go out on a limb a little bit and say that don't bank the farm on it, but you can go to that market with smaller offers and accept their checks and just know that you're going to have a high bounce rate. Because I think the opportunity market is one of the oldest ones in the country, really. It goes way back to the beginning of Yeah, I would say go for it because traditionally in the 30s they were selling $1 books and they were selling them like hotcakes. The equivalent of a $1 book in the 30s is a 1995 book now. So
how many people here are professionals? I mean, doctors, lawyers, attorneys, or have a degree in some field right now? And everybody in here is interested in doing something else, right? This is the opportunity market you want to go for. You do people who are solidly middle class and above. People who are selfish enough to want to do what they want to do in life and motivated enough to do it and actually have the funds to pay for it. I mean, this is a good opportunity. If you're going to get in the opportunities market, this is the market to go for. But we're also going to talk about you are the same kind of people that you want to sell to later on. If you go out for dinner tonight and you happen to go to a Wendy's or a McDonald's, as you're sitting there, look around at the different people in the room and think about them as potential customers for direct mail. And segment them in your mind about do they have the ability to buy? Can they read? You know, it's real unfortunate, but there are a lot of people under 30 who absolutely cannot read today, have no choice, have no desire to read, don't want to read, and won't read no matter what you do. And for you to target those people, you're just wasting your time. You need to target people that want to spend money with you. Otherwise, it's fun to waste time, I guess. But a lot of us aren't for the money.
Not to beat the horse to death, but one of the good things about the opportunity market, as Gary said, is there's a lot of names of proven people who have responded to opportunity market. So the market's there. But I would say the major hot button is definitely the depression.
John, when you take a lengthy piece, 8 pages, 10 pages, like say 20 pages long, because there are a certain number of people who will read, make up their mind about damn near anything before they get to the end of something, do you present an offer somewhere towards the middle of it, kind of synopsize it and shoot them back to the order portion, or do you just kind of lead them by the nose all the way through? See what I'm saying? Do you kind of synopsize it?
I do. And I've written pretty much in a groove for about the last 5 years. I mean, I can sit down and start writing. When I'm through, I wind up magically with 8 pages. It's so ingrained in me. And I don't get around to the actual ordering information until the second to last or last page. What people will do is sometimes jump to the back, or this particular offer that I mentioned to you had a masthead with the phone number on it. So they were calling from that. And on the back, in much bigger, bolder letters, was the department number with the other phone number. No, you don't. Actually, you know, thinking about that, there's a more important question there, and that's you don't want to blow your game before you're ready. There's a time to present the offer, and that is not in the middle of the piece. Generally, it's after you've made your points, and you and I think that'll become really clear to you in the next couple of days as you see how we jockey for position of major bullets and hot buttons and things like that before getting to the offer. Is that it?
Nope. One more.
One last.
For people who want to study your style, do you have a collection of offers that you have written so that people might plagiarize them at will?
The best thing I can recommend you do is buy Gary Halbert's, what's the name of the package? The first seminar.
Killer Advertising?
Is that part of the killer package?
Was it the Killer Advertising package?
No, it was the package you put together after the first seminar. Okay, forget it. I think it's part of the LIFER package. Anyway, that's the only one I can think of, actually.
Okay, what we're going to do now is let's give John a round of applause.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
John, is this copyrighted or can we all use this chart here?
Oh, no, that's a trademark registered.
Did it take your big computer? Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay, we're not going to take a break right now. We're going to go directly into our next speaker, which is Lisa Maurice. Well, Lisa is going to talk about a lot of interesting things.
Can you hear me?
I want to say one thing. Tomorrow or this evening when you go to lunch, buy you a bag of peppermints. These are pure sugar, and they help you get going when later on in the afternoon. That's why you'll see some of these speakers are jumping up and bouncing around because everybody's taking pure sugar.
Can you help me with the opaque projector?
Work.
Okay.
If you want to stand up and stretch for a minute, don't leave the room. Just stand up and stretch because we're going to move some equipment around here.
Karen.
I please see the hands of all of you who are not professional copywriters who are right now writing your own copy. Okay, well, that's great. For those of you who already write your own copy today, I hope that I can give you some tips that will help you to improve your sales effort. And for those of you who have yet to write your copy, today we're going to talk about how to write dynamite copy that sells like crazy. We're going to talk about how to prepare before you write a single word. We're going to get to know the target audience. I'm going to clue you in on a 5-step formula for copywriting success. We're going to learn how to make an offer they can't resist legally. And I'm going to talk to you about direct response, a venture that's worth the risk. I'm going to talk to you about the opportunities and how to make it in this crazy field. Okay. How to prepare before you write a single word. You know, nobody is more enthusiastic than you about what you do. So, in my opinion, the best writer for the job is you. So, nobody knows your product better than you do. Nobody cares as much about the success. No one is as passionate about it. So that's why I think you're the best writer for the job. Now, I am not saying that every one of you, after this course, is going to walk out, sit down at a computer, and write award-winning or award-selling copy. But what I am trying to say to you is that you have the potential to do that. You've really got to study. You've really got to learn. You've really got to put yourself to it. Unfortunately, you know, there's no magic in this. But it can be done. And as a matter of fact, I think Ted Thomas is an excellent example of a business person who does it himself and does it very successfully. Joe Sugarman is another example. He's a great copywriter. You can't hire him. Why? Because he writes for his own company. And he's extraordinarily successful. So when you write, you learn firsthand about what are all the hot buttons that make your target audience buy. And the other thing that happens to you is you walk through all the steps to the sale. And as you do that, you find out firsthand what works for me. And that's how you start to refine your positioning and your marketing strategy. And that's how you become extremely successful. It's a step-by-step process. And we're going to talk a little bit more about how those steps work. So, before you hire, where's that interference coming from? Is that from me? Yeah. Is it this? Bummer. Okay, time out. I can't stand it. It'll drive me crazy. Who would have guessed that this would have turned into burlesque? Okay. All right, so before you hire a copywriter, take a crack at writing it yourself. You know, write a couple of headlines. Write yourself a small classified ad. Write a one-page sales letter and see what it's like. And then when you get to the point where you're ready to pull in your copywriter, you're going to know what you're looking for, and you're going to know how to tell that copywriter what you want. You'll also be much more effective at critiquing them. So number two, you need to study the pros. And when I'm talking about the pros, you're going to see some of the names of some of the best copywriters and their work, which is over here on this table. And there's Tested Advertising Methods. That's a book by John Caples. Scientific Advertising, Claude Hopkins. The Copywriter's Handbook, Bob Bly. How to Write a Good Advertisement by Vic Schwab. Successful Direct Marketing Methods by Bob Stone. I mean, the list goes on and on. But these are some of the top books that are out there, that they're very well written, they're very step-by-step, very clear, and they'll help you on your way. The other thing you need to do is find an ad that you see over and over again, or a direct mail piece that you get over and over again. And you want to study it and write it out longhand. Because those are the winners. The ones that you keep seeing are the ones that work. And when you write it out in your handwriting, you get a sense of the flow. You get a sense of the tempo. You get an understanding of the words that sell. And plus, you get a feeling, not just in your head, but in your hand, of what it's like to write copy. So it becomes not just up in your head, but it's a kinesthetic motion process. It gets ingrained better that way. So number three, you're going to create an idea file. And what I call this is a swipe file. What I have is all of the winning direct response packages, and I'm on lots and lots of mailing lists that other great copywriters have. And I keep them in a file so I can refer to them. Same thing with ads. So get yourself an idea file. Now the idea here isn't to steal other people's copy. The idea here is to get ideas. The idea is to look at formulas. The idea is to get inspiration, to get a sense of what are the steps in this? What does it take to make the sale? And from time to time to see, well, these word combinations work, and how does that work for my target audience? So that you take ideas and you take words and you customize them to work for your target audience. Read everything. Ted Thomas, earlier today was talking about all of the popular magazines that are out there. And I think you need to do that. Use it for inspiration. Don't steal copy, like I said, but do borrow formulas. Find out about your competition. Number four, who are they? How much do they charge? How long have they been in business? Order their products. Get on their mailing list. Call up and complain on their customer service line. Find out how you're different from them so that when everybody else is zigging, you're going to zag and the audience is going to come to you and find you. Number five, define your goals. You can't get any place until you know where you're going. So what is the primary goal of your promotion? Is it to say, yeah, I'm interested, send me more information? Or is it to say, yeah, I want that product, how can I buy it? And how many steps is it going to take you to get there? Can you just send out a sales letter and sell it like that? Or do you need to qualify people? And if you do need to qualify people, how many steps is it going to take for you to get to that sale? Do you have a very complicated product? Is it very expensive? Is it something that people don't know about yet? Then it's probably going to take you more than one step to get there. You may have to use a small classified ad to a direct mail package, and then maybe you're going to have to call people on the phone. So you need to think to yourself, what's my goal? How am I going to get there? And what are the steps I'm going to take to get there? And you have to figure out what's the priority of those steps to my sale. John Eager is going to talk to you more about two-step marketing, because there's many, many ways to sell through direct response, and I obviously can't cover everything right now. All right, so now we're going to get to the crux of what copywriting is all about. Know your target audience. There is nothing more critical to your success than knowing these humanoids here, because if you don't know who your target audience is, then you don't have a business. Everything you do revolves around them. So you need to become an expert in human nature. Let's find out what makes people tick. And this is really where I wanted to talk about what Ted Thomas was saying earlier, and that Ted Nicholas, I'm sorry. Sorry, Ted. Ted Nicholas. Read mass appeal books, read the bestsellers, read magazines like Cosmopolitan and Time, read the tabloids like in The Inquirer, watch primetime TV, and listen to talk radio. Talk to secretaries. Talk to cab drivers. Talk to waitresses, hairstylists. Try to get a sense of who the general public is. You know, get out there in the trenches and talk to people. Number two, what makes people buy? You know, most marketers think that people buy their products, but people buy solutions to their problems or they buy benefits. And what motivates people? Napoleon summed it up nicely when he said, there are two motives to action, self-interest and fear. So people either want to gain something pleasant or they want to avoid something negative. They want to win an advantage or they want to avoid a loss. So on the upside, on self-interest, people want to stay healthy. People want to save money. They want to lower their expenses right now. They want to live well. They want to be popular and attractive. They want to do things well. They want to save time. They want to have fun. And on the downside, which is fear, they want to avoid humiliation, criticism, illness, boredom, pain, losing money or prestige or position. So there's a whole emotional gamut. So what we're talking about is appealing to people emotionally. So number three, another way to get to know your target audience is through demographics and psychographics. Demographic information is fairly easy to get. You can get it from standard SRDS. Standard Research Data Services. Standard Rate and Data Services. So the information you might want to include would be like age, income, occupation, you know, what sex they are, where they live, so that you can get that kind of statistical information. And then psychographic information that you want to get. And this is really important information. It's harder to get. But what you're trying to understand, what you're trying to hone in on, is what are people's convictions? What do they believe? What are their opinions? Do they vote Republican or Democratic? Are they independents? What's their personality and what's their lifestyle? And getting psychographic information, I'm going to tell you a little bit how to do that. And one of the ways that you can get that is number four, talk to your customers. And I think even more importantly, listen to your customers. So if you take phone orders, take some of those phone orders yourself. Call people up. Answer your customer service calls. Read all of your customer mail. You know, get a sense of what people like and don't like about your product. Get a sense of how they express themselves. What language do they use? And you're going to use that language in your sales message to them. Try selling directly over the phone to people. Find out, what are people worried about right now? What do they care about? So, okay, if you find that like talking to people face-to-face or even over the phone is really intimidating to you, you can always be a chicken and send out a survey. You can still get some of the same kind of demographic information if you say, you know, do you make between $25,000 and $50,000? And you put a little box there, and they check whatever their income is, you know, where they live, those kinds of that kind of information. And you can even ask a few questions, psychographic questions such as, you know, do you believe in such and such? What is your biggest concern right now? How can I improve my service to you? So people do respond to your surveys, and you can get some information that way. So, okay, we've got an emerging picture here of your target audience. It's people with a human need who want to get something good or avoid something painful or bad. So they live in a certain area. They make a certain amount of money. They believe in such and such religion. They have certain opinions. Maybe we have a sense of what language they use, how do they express themselves. And you may have an understanding of what appeals to them emotionally. So now what you're going to do is number five. Define your USP. What's USP? That's right, unique selling proposition. So what is that? It's your most compelling benefit. So it reaches for your prospect's deepest feelings concerning your product. How do you identify it? You need to ask yourself, Does my product help people save money? Does it help people avoid unpleasant work? Does it help them to get or stay healthy, to feel secure or important, powerful, elite? Is my product fun? Is it exciting? Does it arouse curiosity? Ask yourself, what am I really selling? I'm obviously not selling a product. Define for yourself, what's the human need? What's the human value that's behind your product? Okay. So now we're going to talk about features versus benefits. Obviously, we know that people don't buy products, they buy benefits. So we need to stress benefits to sell. And there's an expression that a lot of copywriters use, which I think is really great. And it says, sell the sizzle, not the steak. So let me tell you what the difference between features and benefits are. Features are an intrinsic part of your product, and benefits affect your customers personally and appeal to them emotionally. Benefits are what customers want. Features prove that they can have them. Okay, so let me give you an example. Let's say that your product is a washing machine. And here's the main features. It's got a quick wash cycle, and it measures 24 inches in diameter. So you're going to turn the features into benefits. And with a quick wash cycle, what you can say is it gets laundry done faster, and it saves on energy bills. And with the 24 inches in diameter, you say it fits neatly into tight spaces, and it doesn't take up valuable floor space. So before you write your copy, think about your target audience. Write down all of your product features. Get yourself a piece of paper. Write down all of your product features on one side of that paper. On the other side of the paper, you're going to assign it a benefit. So you're going to do that with every feature that you have in your product. Assign it a benefit, and then go back through there and decide, what's the number one most compelling benefit? What's the number two most compelling benefit? And so on. And from those numbers, from 1 to 10, let's say, you are going to have the backbone of your copy. Here's the most important feature benefit. Here's the second one. And that's the order of how you're going to talk about your product to sell it to your customers. Okay. So, number 7, right to sell. Okay, let's take a look at our humanoids here. When you sell to people through direct response advertising, whether that's an ad or direct mail, you're not selling to all of these people. You know, they're not an amorphous blob. You're going to sell to them one person at a time. So when you write, pretend that you are writing to your closest friend. As a matter of fact, get yourself a picture of somebody you really like and tack it up on your wall. And when you write, you say, "Dear Sandy, you know, I have to tell you about this exciting product." And write to that one person as if it's a personal letter between you and I. So you're going to talk one-on-one with people, and you're going to use a friendly, conversational tone. So when you're writing, don't worry about being grammatically correct. As a matter of fact, forget everything that your sixth grade English teacher ever told you, because you're going to write like you speak. And you can start a sentence with the word "and." Or you can dangle your participles. Whatever it takes to get your message across and be compelling and be convincing and be down to earth and use a conversational tone. So there's another rule to keep in mind, and that is, don't try to be creative. Don't try to be funny. Don't try to be glib. What you're doing is, what you're trying to do is convince people that you have the hottest product in the world and that they must have it tomorrow. So when you're writing something and you're through with it, show it to somebody. And if they come back to you and say, "Gee, you're a really great writer," then you know you've failed. If they come back to you and they say, "Gee, you've got a really great product, how can I get it?" then you know you're doing the right thing. So to write to sell, you need to keep it simple. You need to use active verbs. You know, instead of being verbs, instead of saying "is doing this," say "do," "perform," "it offers." Use active voices and active verbs. Use short words. Use short sentences. As a matter of fact, try to keep your sentences 14 words or less. Use short paragraphs. 3 sentences per paragraph. So remember, people are pressed for time. They're lazy. They get bombarded with sales messages all the time. So don't bore them. Don't patronize them. Don't use jargon. Be very clear. Be very compelling. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about the difference in typefaces. Up here at the top, this is a sans serif typeface. Down here at the bottom, this is a serif typeface. When you write to people, I'm going to. When you write to people, your headlines can be used in sans serif, but your body copy needs to have serif. And what that is below the lines here, there's little marks that make it easy for the eye to read it. This is a serif typeface. This is sans serif. It isn't as easy to read. So make it very easy to read. And remember that the more you tell, the more you sell. So somebody was asking about the length of their copy. And it needs to be long enough for you to cover every point, to overcome objections, and to ask for the order. There's no such thing as copy that's too long, only copy that's too boring. Okay, now right now I want to give you a list of words that sell. This is a partial list, so write these down. Free, new, amazing, now, you, win, easy, save, announcing, why, how to, yes, find out, breakthrough, and guarantee. So, as you are preparing to write, think, plan, organize, and edit like crazy. Okay, you're ready to write your copy. I'm going to give you a formula that's going to make it a lot easier for you. This is a five-step formula for copywriting success. Number one is attract attention. Number two is draw interest. Number three is prove it. Number four is create a desire to act now. And number five is ask for the order, or if you're doing leads generation, which is to get people to raise their hand and say, yes, I'm interested, ask for some kind of action. So, okay, with attracting attention, we've already said that people are lazy. Your competition is fierce. People are super skeptical right now. So what you've got to do is make it so compelling that it's easier for a person to read your copy than it is for them to either throw it in the trash or skip over it in a magazine. So you do that with an arresting headline. And what you want to do is help people to understand how they can win an advantage or avoid a loss. Okay, so I'm just going to give you some headlines that are effective. And if I go too fast, tell me and we'll slow down. Okay. So here's a headline you could use, you know, this will give you an idea of one you could use for avoiding loss. A little mistake that cost an entrepreneur $50,000 a year. Should I repeat that? A little mistake that cost an entrepreneur $50,000 a year. So here's another one. This is for winning an advantage. This is a classic. How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. That's How to Win Friends and Influence People. When you write your headlines, you need to include specific information, exact dollar amounts, clarifying words like which of these, who else, or here's. Here's an example. Which of these 14.95 CDs do you want for only $2 each? So in this example, I'm not asking you, do you want these CDs? I'm saying, which of these CDs, you obviously want this from me. So which of these CDs for $14.95, there's a specific dollar amount, do you want for only $2 each? Here's some more clarifying headlines. Who else wants younger looking skin in only 14 days? Five deadly myths that keep smokers hooked. Why some people achieve 100 to 1,000 times more success than others. I'll repeat these. Who else wants younger looking skin in only 14 days? 5 deadly myths that keep smokers hooked. Why some people achieve 100 to 1,000 times more success than others.